What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we will be talking with a repeat guest on high performance and mindset. If there is one thing we all can change right now, it is our mindset. The mind is more powerful than we think, and we will be talking about some actionable tips you can incorporate today to improve your performance and mindset. Let me introduce our returning guest. Sarah Derenbacher is a leadership and performance strategist who advises, consults, and works hand-in-hand with entrepreneurs, executives, and sports teams in the areas of peak performance, leadership, organizational, and team culture, and mindset. Her expertise is in guiding leaders and coaches through high-risk, high-reward growth and development, accelerating breakthrough moments, transforming mindset and culture, and sustaining peak performance. Sarah has built her expertise over 18 years of experience consulting with a wide range of businesses from small to mid-size to Fortune 500, and with athletic directors, head coaches, and athletes across multiple sports teams and divisions in university athletics. Sarah has helped facilitate 20 plus new individual and program records across clients, multiple league championship appearances, multiple first-time bids to NCAAs, an NCAA Sweet 16 appearance, and continues to touch the lives of many athletes, coaches, and executives she works with. When Sarah's not providing strategies to strengthen performance, she's helping clients identify with and connect more deeply to the fulfillment and joy in what they do. Sarah is the creator of the Evolvability Performance System. She is also a certified DISC behavioral analyst, a HeartMath Add Heart facilitator, and a 10-year student of meditation and embodied inquiry practices. Sarah believes passionately that there is a different way of achieving high performance, a way that doesn't leave us feeling depleted and fatigued from the pressure to perform, and instead can heighten our ability to go and grow beyond our limitations, bringing deeper meaning to our lives and skillful mastery of our craft. Welcome back to the podcast, Sarah. What's up?
How are you? I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm doing great. I love that last paragraph. I mean, that definitely sums up what you do.
Yes. Yes.
So tell us more about what you do on a daily basis. Like, what is your 9-to-5 job?
So as you can imagine, there's lots of different things that the day is comprised of, from as far as client contact and delivery. But I really boil all of that up to, I get to help people do more of what they love in ways that bring them more fulfillment, which is a pretty fun gig.
It sounds like it's not even work for you. It's just fun.
No, it's really not. I feel pretty aligned and kind of this being a really passionate pursuit for me. So yeah, I have a ton of fun with it. Always learning and growing right alongside clients. So yeah, it's an exciting job.
You just put together puzzles all day, don't you?
That's right. That's right.
I love it.
Yep.
So what does performance mean in your professional opinion?
So performance at a really simplistic level, I look at as just accomplishing a task or an action. So that could be anything from walking down the street to changing something in your personal life to developing a skill, developing your craft. It's basically any kind of action that you are carrying out at a really basic level. When we get more into athletics or business ownership, or which is kind of the world that I play in, high performance is what we say at Evolvability is really creating synergy in the environment that you're operating in the day-to-day and the individual and how they show up to that environment. So when there's harmony between those two pieces and there is a deep sense of alignment there, that ability to carry out whatever action it is that you are doing is dramatically increased.
I just thought of Nike's slogan, just do it. Is that performance? Just like, just do it. Just get up and do it. Put something into action.
Yes, it is just do it. And then there's layers. And this is where we spend a lot of time, actually, because I think we live in a culture of just do it. And sometimes that just do it takes us really far from ourselves. Takes mm-hmm. us really far down this path of achieving. And we really want to make sure at Evolvability that we're with our clients in the balance between that just do it and just be it. Mm. We believe that when we're doing from our being, that there's so much more power in our performance. There's so much more power in what it is exactly that we're doing in that moment. And so it's bringing those worlds together that really creates that magic elixir for performance at a high level.
What about wholeness? What exactly is wholeness?
Yeah, so wholeness is a state of being where you are undivided in yourself. So you are just firmly in your being and you're undivided from the moment. Wholeness is where there is nothing wrong. There's nothing to fix. There's no improvement that needs to be made. It doesn't mean that we don't want to get better, but it means that first we're good where we are so that wherever it is that we're growing to or growing into is coming already from a place of enough. We want to grow into and perfect our craft from a place of enough so that we can open to the fulfillment. We can open to the joy that elevated level of performance is going to bring us so that we are balancing that just do it and the just be it.
Now, does that make sense? It does. And the previous podcast, we talked a lot about flow state. I mean, that was the title of that podcast. Mm-hmm. Is wholeness mm-hmm. synonymous with being in the flow state?
So there are pieces of the flow state that very much come into play when it comes to wholeness. This is a mindset shift. And I see this, especially in athletics, a lot. There is such a desire to strive, right? We are always striving, always improving. And it, again, as long as that is done in the context of wholeness, we're going to be fulfilled no matter what that outcome is. When we're looking for opportunities for that flow state, it's not uncommon to start to strive for those moments of being in flow. And so again, this balance, just do it, just be it. We want to create an environment for ourselves, me for my clients, where it's not that striving, it's from that wholeness, because it's from that undivided self. I mean, that's the definition of flow, where awareness meets action. It's from that undivided moment that we kind of get catapulted into that flow state. And so we want to go in and start to really see what it's about, see what that environment is about, what barriers need to kind of get broken down so that we've got an environment of wholeness, which then can open even more into flow. So this is the fastest way to get to that flow state without touching. We don't touch any of the biological pieces, and there's a lot of those pieces that are a part of flow. But this is a really foundational piece. When that environment, let's just use athletics, when that team environment is operating from a place of wholeness and they have an undivided sense of unity as a team, and they're able to show up competitively to those moments really present, that foundation creates the opportunity to get into flow more often.
I just respect the work that you do because you're training the most important muscle that we have, our brain. And I think we should probably all start with that. I think you would probably agree, but mm-hmm. we rarely do. Business owners, myself included, I just work harder. I work harder to get more done. Mm-hmm. And yes, that may translate to being busier and more successful, however you define that, but it's not very efficient sometimes. It's straining and taxing on my health and my relationships. And that's just one example. Athletics too, pure raw talent, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can get very far, but you're yep. probably going to hit some walls and hit a ceiling. where if you then fix your mindset, you just break through, and you probably see that every day.
Every day. It is the number one challenge that we see. And not just even with athletes, but with coaches. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in that environment and you are demanding and expecting and inviting your players to kind of elevate their game, you have to really walk the talk too and get to that next level. And I think that could be true for whether it's, you know, a coach in that environment, a business owner who's looking to grow the business, a parent who is looking to lead their household in a certain way. The ability to really cultivate the control and have the daily practices. And, you know, I always say before we can change skill set, which is anything in the external, we have to be able to change mindset. And so knowing what and how and where to find, you know, kind of those pinholes, if you will, to be able to see what it is exactly that needs to change is we do a lot of work with that with clients.
I've been doing a lot of reading on mindset recently and a lot of work myself. So I'm curious on why is mindset so important in your opinion?
Because we live in the material world. This is the name of the game. Yes, there are emotions that influence the mindset. And I think it's so core to understand how those emotions are influencing the mindset so that we can make those changes in mindset. But ultimately, the way that we respond to our environment is dictated by how much literal control we have in our thought patterns. And so our ability to disrupt the potentially negative thought patterns and kind of create a different neural pathway that allows us to see other types of solutions, a more expansive view, doesn't keep us gridlocked, doesn't, you know, exacerbate this fear of failure, allows us to, it's not only be more effective or be a higher performer, it actually opens us up to more opportunities for fulfillment. When we are mired in hypervigilance, when we are mired in whatever habitual thinking is happening in our mind, we miss that sunset. You know, we miss that exciting moment in the day because we are just so clouded in our mind. And so I think it's essential for high performance. I think it's essential for being a human being. I think it's essential for having more fulfillment in our lives.
Fulfillment, great word. How many people have fulfillment in what they do? That's great. That's a good one.
Great question.
Do you have any stats on that?
I have no stats on that, but I have many years of conversations with clients about the very auspicious relationship with fulfillment, because I think when it comes to pursuing a career or any life path, we're pursuing it because we think that path is going to open us to more fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And so we live in this perpetual state of, okay, have I arrived now? Have I arrived now? Am I going to feel this magic? You know, and I had that experience personally. You know, I was in a phenomenal job. I was surrounded by amazing people before I started this business. And that was my experience. You know, I had worked 10, 11 years inside of corporate waiting for this fulfillment to kick in. And I'm like, holy cow, how do we find more of this in the day to day? Let that be what dictates our pathway forward so that we are moving in more of that harmony. Because, you know, the name of the game for us too is impact. And as human beings, in order to have impact, you have to be connected to that fulfillment. You have to be so deeply rooted in whatever it is that you're doing in that moment.
Do you agree with this? Like I love entrepreneurship because I'm constantly evolving and working on myself to be better. And I know that the end game is never going to be attainable. Like what does that even mean? I don't know, but that excites me. Whereas some people might hear that statement and be like, well, that's stupid. That doesn't make sense to me. That's overwhelming. Like that's, you're putting too much pressure on yourself, but no, I disagree. I like that challenge every day. Mm-hmm. How do you, what's your thought on that?
I think this is the difference between a growth mindset and the fixed mindset.
Yeah. Good segue. Let's talk about that. Good segue.
Okay. Yep.
So let me touch on that real fast. So I've been doing a lot of work myself on mindset, like I said, scarcity versus abundance, fixed versus growth mindset, right? Whatever you want to call it. I've had a scarce mindset with a lot of things growing up, and that's just the environment I was in. You know, I love my parents to death, but you know, money is one example, and they're just, you know, my dad worked, my mom stayed at home. She did a great job raising us. Again, shout out to mom. I know she listens to the podcast, but I think this is a lot of families too, because it's a generational thing. Like my grandfather grew up in the Great Depression. Like he didn't have anything, like everything was rationed. And then that's how my dad was raised too. And, you know, it's save and be frugal and be smart with your money. But sometimes that really pigeonholes you. And that's, again, this is just one example. But so when I started my own practice, I'm like, okay, I need to switch my mindset from a scarcity to an abundance mindset. Like, okay, there's a lot of chiropractors out here in Rochester, but no one's doing it like me. I'm the only Dr. Matt Driscoll, you know, and some people might hear that as being arrogant, but I'm like, no, like that's going to open these doors for me and opportunities to help and serve more people my way. Cause it's going to be different than everybody else and vice versa for them. So you know, like that transformation with my mindset has just helped in so many ways in my life. So what do you talk about this a lot with clients?
Yeah, that's a great example. And what a really powerful shift for you to be able to make in your life, because not only does that change things for you, but changes things for your family, changes things for all of your clients and patients and the lives that you touch, because you have this more expanded view. Yes, are we coming from scarcity? Are we coming from abundance? Are we growth? Are we fixed? Where are we on these spectrums? Is a conversation I'm having daily. I actually, the flight home yesterday just was really contemplating this question of, is fulfillment a luxury? And when you just mentioned that piece about your dad and the Great Depression and frugal and needing to make choices that, okay, maybe they'll make us happy. Maybe they'll make me a more whole human, but ultimately, right, I need to pay the bills. There's a survival piece in all of this. I think when we are operating from that survival piece, we are much more inclined to operate from scarcity. That may be environmental. That may be just where people are in their lives. I think that there are a lot of variables. I don't think there's just a switch that you can flip to go from scarcity to abundance. But when you can make that shift, you have greater power. You have more agency to create the pathway forward where you can find that wholeness, where you can find that abundance.
And you have less fear too, because fear is paralyzing. And you know, what is the worst thing that could happen to me opening up my own practice? I fail and I have to go work for somebody else. That's what I kept telling myself. And yeah, that would be a big deal. That would be a shot to my gut, my pride, you know, but that's the worst thing. My family is still going to be fed. My family is going to still have a house. Like we're going to make ends meet. We're going to figure it out.
Yep.
So but I will never know unless I take that chance.
Yes. Fear is a little bit of a dirty word that we don't like to talk about, but is at the root of so many interactions and so many of our behaviors. And it's so subconscious. That scenario that you just walked through of what's the worst that could happen? I call that worst case scenario. And actually with executives, I use this in a lot of ways where we do exactly that. We walk it back. What's the worst case? If you were all in this particular scenario, you get fired, you lose your job, but the fear that creates, the fear of, well, that validates my unworthiness, that validates, you know, I'm not smart enough. I'm not competent enough. I can't provide for my family. There's all of these tentacles that are connected to the fear that we are subconsciously managing daily, especially if we choose to make this shift. So It's kind of like if you think of in the scarcity mindset, the sea is a little rocky. And so everything is kind of staying churned, but it's a comfortable churn. And when you shift into the abundance, you have to be really okay with the stuff that may rise to the top as everything starts to settle. You have to get really comfortable facing yourself and looking in the mirror and saying, okay, if I have to make that pivot, if this fails, that failure doesn't mean I'm incompetent, I'm unworthy. It's that reframing, that conscious reframing of how to manage the fear as it comes up. And this gets back to your comment about mindset being everything. Mm-hmm. When that fear comes up, how do we reframe it to use it to fuel our growth as opposed to paralyze us and prevent our growth?
Yeah, we could talk about this for hours. I feel like my conversations have switched too over the years of talking less about money because I just am more at peace with it because I know it will come. If you continue to do good work and make the right decisions and not make it all about that. And again, that's just one example, but that's a big example for a lot of people because we need money to pay the bills and to keep the lights on and put food on the table. And for a lot of people, it's paralyzing. It creates so much fear.
It really does.
So it's a game changer though. When you can have that shift, it's liberating, it's freeing. You just can take a deep breath and then you can go have some fun.
You can. And I will also say there's kind of this initial shift that happens it sounds like you've probably experienced this, where there's that first audible kind of sigh of relief. And almost like a looking around, like, holy cow, I feel some peace when it comes to this.
Yeah, for sure.
And then there's little ripples that start to happen. You know, maybe in a month that money gets tight. And then all of a sudden it brings it back up again. And I can't emphasize the power of mindset enough, right? What are the tools? What are the strategies that you're using when that fear comes up? Because it doesn't just go away. It just shows up differently. And maybe we have some tools to be able to ride the waves a little bit more gently. But that fear, I think this is a real challenge for me with the explosion of the self-help industry, that it's all about eradicating fear and living fearlessly. And I don't buy into any of that. I think it's learning to live with the very human experience of fear that actually frees us and gives us that sense of inner calm, that inner freedom that opens the door to all of the abundance. And so I don't think it ever goes away.
I think
it's just learning how to ride the waves.
How to manage it, how to cope with it, how to address it and push it aside.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. What are some actionable tips for listeners to start working on their mindset? Right now, I mean, whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, fixed to growth, or just looking to get their mind and body, just getting the right results from their mind and body.
Yeah. So there's actually.
Hi, puppy.
That is Greta, who makes her presence known sometimes. Some actionable tools. So one of the strategies that I use with athletes and coaches a lot, I have called it NAAA. And it's a four-step process that just kind of brings us back to the moment. And really what we're talking about is when fear takes over. We're only in scarcity when we are afraid of not having enough, if we're talking about money. We're only in scarcity if we're afraid of not performing at the level of our talent. And so what we're really talking about here is how do we manage fear as it comes up? And so this four-step process of first notice what's happening in your mind and body. We all can feel that when it shifts. We feel the fluttery feeling in our body. All the sensations take over. Sometimes we feel a little woozy in our head when that fear sets in. We feel really distracted and separate from the present moment. And so if we can take notice and become active observers, we're actively witnessing when we feel some of these shifts in our mind and body, that's going to help us figure out, okay, what's going on here? What is this really about? Then the second part of this is accepting it, right? For you to make that shift, Matt, it was, okay, I have to accept that I have this fear of failure. Mm-hmm. When we accept it, we disempower it. So fear only has any power over us when it is behind the scenes, thinking that it's running the show. So when we just get it in the open and we call it what it is and we accept it, there's not as much of an emotional charge. And then we just objectively know, okay, we have to reframe this. And we walk out, for example, worst case scenario, we just have to reframe this. In that process, we're acknowledging the reality of that fear. That's the third step, is to acknowledge it. Yes, this fear is here. Whether you're an athlete with a highly competitive performance in front of you, of course you have fear. Of course we have fear as humans. Fear sometimes happens because we care. Fear happens because we are really passionate about the results and what it is that we're doing, and we want to be successful, or we want to help people, whatever that outcome looks like. So acknowledging that, of course, it's there also disempowers it. And then the fourth is to adjust. So once we recognize that it's here and that it's having all of this power and that it has shifted us to a place of distrust with ourselves and separation, then we just adjust and we come back to that place in ourselves that we trust. We trust that no matter what happens, no matter what that performance is on that court, no matter what the performance is as a business owner, that we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure it out, and we're going to make the adaptation because we have practiced and we have prepared and we have thought through all of this. And ultimately, you know, we're a whole human. We will figure this out. So that four-step process has been really transformational for people.
Have you ever read the book, The War of Art by Stephen Yes. Pressfield?
Yes.
So I keep thinking of that right now, fear and resistance being like brother and sister. I mean, yes. Resistance is an emotion, I guess. It's an energy that mm-hmm. we let win most of the time.
Yes,
and that prevents us from reaching our goals and doing the thing.
Yes, we do. And we don't, because of the way that our conditioning has happened and some of the way our ego is structured and it is very subconscious, but we don't even know when the resistance is happening a lot because we're not in tune with it. We're not used to listening Yep. or observing or being with these things when it comes up, which kind of gets me to the second, you know, actionable tip. I cannot recommend doing some embodiment practices more. Embodiment practices meaning...
Hey, what does that mean?
So breath work, mm-hmm. coming into your body to build awareness of the sensations that are happening from the neck down. We live our lives from the neck up in a lot of cases in our heads. And that's where fear lives. Fear can manifest in the body, but fear is happening because of how we have constructed our thoughts and the ways that we're filtering our experiences. So when we do this breath work, when we do meditation and come into stillness, when we do any kind of physical activity like working out or yoga or dance or whatever the case may be, and we allow ourselves to have a physical body experience, we build that trust and that connection in a way that our body starts communicating with us around the resistance, around the fear, so that we can see it sooner.
This is the last page of The War of Art, Stephen Pressfield's book. I love this. I saved it, I highlighted it. This is what it says. In the end, the question can only be answered by action. Do it or don't do it. You not only hurt yourself, even destroy yourself. You hurt your children, you hurt me, you hurt the planet. Creative work is not a selfish act or a bid for attention on the part of the actor. It's a gift to the world and every being in it. Don't cheat us of your contribution. Give us what you've got. I love that. It's like, how can you not want to do the thing? Like whatever you're working on, writing a book, you know, inventing something, like you got to start now after reading that.
So good. It's so good. I love that. That's so good.
So you gave us two tips there. Anything else you wanted to share?
Self-awareness. This okay. is the third. Whether that is a simple, you know, 3-minute journaling at the end of the day, of what you experienced, starting that dialogue with yourself is again what builds a foundation of trust and allows you to start to see when am I in scarcity? When am I in abundance? When am I feeling my best? When am I feeling my worst? How do I reframe this? Mm-hmm. Can't emphasize that is a non-negotiable in my work with people, because if you don't have that dialogue with yourself and you are just going out and you are doing the latest strategy, you are overlaying these strategies on maybe what's not even, I don't want to say wrong, but something that needs to be improved. And so when you start to have that dialogue, you're able to find and seek and feel and experience the best possible pathway for yourself. And you won't be, I have seen people who have kind of fallen victim to this, you know, this worshiping of gurus of self-improvement or change, or because it's the latest fad. And oh, that breaks my heart when I see that happen, because there's so much awareness and goodness and expertise that lives inside of them. If only they would give themselves permission to have that dialogue.
Okay, selfish personal question here. How do I avoid multitasking and stay focused on tasks?
Great question. One of the hardest things as human beings, because in the world we live in, we are rewarded for our ability to multitask. The more we can get done, the better. But there's something called single attention. And this just takes discipline. There's a really practical practice called task batching. Have you heard of this?
No.
So it is where you plan out your day and you batch all of your similar tasks together. So if you need to respond to a bunch of emails, you put a block on the calendar, and for the next 60 minutes, that is what I'm doing, which then frees you up to do some of your more thought-provoking work or your work that requires more concentration in a different part of the day when you've got a more cleared schedule, if you will. So this task batching has been also life-changing for people. That's one piece, but this practicing of single attention is literally, you come into the space, you shut down your phone, you turn off your notifications, you don't touch it. I forget the stat that I just read about the number of times it was every 9 minutes in 2020 on average people touched their phones.
I think that's high. I think it's even less than
it
that.
Was like,
yeah.
Crazy. It was like,
that's a lot.
60 some. Yes. And every time we do that, it takes us 15% longer to get back into the task that we were doing prior to, especially if it was a high concentration task. And so it is really being intentional about whatever the task at hand is. And that, even talk about mindset, that is the power of the mindset. If you are talking about some sort of performance in the future, visualization is going to help you by practicing and mentally rehearsing, kind of blocking out a lot of those distractions. Meditation is going to help bring you into the present moment in a way where when you do sit down to do whatever it is at hand, you've got access to that level of presence, that level of concentration that is required. And then breathing. I know you've done some stuff on breathing. I think I've seen some stuff on breathing. When our minds become distracted, it's the quickest way back to the present moment. And that is all single attention is. It's not letting our minds wander. It's getting back to presence and finishing whatever it is that is in front of us.
What does your to-do list look like, though? How do you put together a to-do list?
Great question. First, I have a to be list. That just be it, just do it feels really key right now. So it is, what am I wanting to feel in the day? And how am I wanting to be in the world in the day? And then from there, it's that lens that I look through when I am figuring out what client delivery looks like. Mm. And what the calls look like and what the tone of the emails that I'm writing feels like. So the to-do list doesn't necessarily change, but the lens and the context that it is getting done in is what changes.
Now, what does your self-care look like to maximize your potential and performance?
Yes. Well, I just got back from 3 days in California, which nice. Was that it that that was a big, it had been a few years since I had really just powered down. And that that is often overlooked in our world of high achievers, especially. Mm-hmm. But I was feeling that resistance. I was feeling this fear creeping, and I was experiencing some of mm-hmm. those things. And I knew that it was just time. So I think listening to that is practice number one. And then I have a morning routine that I do every morning, which is meditation. There's at least 10 minutes of that. There's some sort of an embodiment practice. Maybe it's yin yoga. Maybe it's taking the bike on the trail, whatever it is that just brings me into my body and reminds me that, you know, I'm a human being in this material world and it's a gift to be here. And can I approach the day like that? And then coffee. Always about the coffee.
Amen to that.
So yes.
So what about breathing? What specifically when you meditate? Do you follow like a certain cadence, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out? Like, what do you do?
So there's two types of breathing that I end up doing. It's the really deep belly breath mm-hmm. that just, sometimes that just melts me like right into my body. And it's the really big breath fully to the top, and you hold it and then you take in and you just do this until you are totally full, and then it's the big release. And usually I'll do that
mm-hmm. in through the nose, out through the mouth.
Yes, in through the nose, out through the mouth, and then when you get to that tip top, it feels a little bit like you're drowning, and then you just keep taking it in with a really big release. Go ahead.
You should read the book, Breath by James Nestor. Have you read that?
Okay. I have not, check it out. But I'm adding it.
I had to return it back to the library. I need to buy it because I was only halfway through and I'm like, no, I need that still.
Awesome.
but he's got chapters on, one was on the exhale and just how important the exhale is to get rid of that stale air. And that stale carbon dioxide that sits in there. But check that out. You're going to have a different perspective on carbon dioxide too. And how important of a gas carbon dioxide is. That's the catalyst to breathe. That's what we need more of. Yeah, we all think it's a waste product. Yeah. So check that book out. You'll like it.
Okay, I will check that out.
But I like that. The breath in, hold, and then exhale. That pretty much sums up your self-care, I think. I mean, unless you wanted to add something else.
No, that's really it. And I think, you know, all of the practices that we recommend, that evolvability, you know, we practice daily, all of the self-awareness, the journaling, the dialogue, the embodiment. I think we are big proponents of walking the talk. Mm-hmm. And so all of those pieces are just such a natural part of our daily practices here as well.
Anything exciting lined up this year with your business?
Yes, we are excited for all of the teams who didn't have an opportunity to play last year, this whole past year because of COVID. And so we have been really hunkered down and creating ways to get coaches and teams the most important information that they need with such a short runway they're going to have this season with the entire 12 months of not competing, not playing, not necessarily seeing skill or talent development, not knowing what it's going to be like to come together as a cohesive unit, you know, come the fall. And so we've actually created, we're really excited about it, an assessment that is going to be able to give them a lot of that information in a pretty quick way, and then set them up to make some immediate changes. So we're excited to get rolling with that in the next couple of months.
Very exciting. Now, what exactly is your title? Because like, should I be calling you Dr. Sarah? Are you just like a psychologist on steroids? Like
I am. You can leadership and performance strategist. We go in, we make recommendations. We work with people hand in hand. And people who know me, who are listening to this probably, it's so much less about the title, for what we do. It's kind of actually, my clients joke around about how we're a bit of the wizard behind the curtain in a lot of ways. There's a lot of times that people don't even know that we're working with some of the teams that we're working with. Mostly because we're just serving up all of the information and strategies that they're most needing at that point in time, which has nothing to do with title. So I'm not opposed to title, but certainly right. not defined by it in this work. Yeah.
So how can listeners connect with you online to hear more about your business, services, and or make an appointment?
Yes. So we are on Twitter, all the usual, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And then of course you can visit us at evolveability.co for any additional information you might be looking for about our process. We've got a webinar series that we're launching in August, a Zoom series that is going to really touch into this idea of wholeness and high performance. And we're going to do a couple of sessions for fall, winter, spring, and summer. And we're just going to take the usual pieces, you know, culture, leadership, all of these things that are just, you know, hot button issues that we like to talk about as a culture, and look through this lens of wholeness. What does leadership look like if we're looking through this lens of wholeness? What does performance look like if we're looking through this lens of wholeness, and start to create a conversation in the community around how we can have more strategies that help human beings be whole and fulfilled.
Sarah, you're an awesome person. Thank you for your time. I mean, you're doing some awesome work. And listeners, I know you can't see this video, but several times I saw you and noticed you just closing your eyes and like just really being thoughtful and intentional on what you're going to say. And I could just see the wheels turning in your brain. And I respect that. I love that. And you care. I mean, it's evident that you care. You love what you do, and you care. You care about your clients and helping people. So thank you for Absolutely. What you do.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for what you do.
I'm doing my best, one day at a time. Well, my second repeat guest, that was fun. Thanks for sharing all that.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of value from what Sarah shared with us today, and we'll share this with family and friends. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me, go to my website, driscollchiropracticny.com, read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me, info@driscollchiropracticny.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram, @dr.driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.